Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mystic Records Radio. And let me see, let's put the new version of Crankshaft on Army of the Dead. Special guest in the studio today, Kenny Kimmel from the band Red Pills. Hey, Kenny, how's it going?
Hey, what's happening, Candy? Having a nice Saturday morning. Is that a new recording we just listened to?
Yes, and for those who don't know, Kenny used to be in the former band Crankshaft, and that was the
I was in one of the versions of the many gloried stages of the Crankshaft.
Exactly, and that was Dave Anger's new version of
"That Was Sick."
The Dead.
It sounded
Isn't
good, Dave
awesome?
Anger. I don't know if you're out there. I know Rob, I think, is tuning in. That was really, really good. I liked it.
Yes, and it's just amazing because on the Return to Slimy Valley is coming up next. And it's in the quay, so to speak.
Excellent.
And yes, and Rob is working on the artwork to.
Nice.
We're using the original artwork from Mad Mark Rude, you know, that was on the original. It came from Slimy Valley, but he's redoing the lettering because it's Return to Slimy Valley.
Uh-huh, right. Return to. Well,
exactly.
You know, I'd be happy, you know, if Dave's jumping in the studio to re-record Crankshaft songs, I'm pretty sure I still remember the three notes that License to Kill came out on Copulation or Copulation 2, I can't remember.
Ooh.
But that was the one I played on, so I'd be ready to re-record License to Kill at any time. A very appropriate song considering the constant state of abuse and disabuse by some of our local law enforcement officers. A little overzealous policing at times, perhaps.
That's true. Well, you know, up here in Northern California, I know you're up here, too, in the same area.
Yep.
And just recently, an officer who, a young boy rolled over in a car, and the car was on its side, and he gets out of the side window with his hands up in the air, and the officer shot and killed him. And,
oh, that sounds
you know,
a little excessive. That sounds excessive.
Well, yeah. And the officer was just sentenced prison.
Well, that's why,
know?
Again, a song like that that's like 35 years old, I mean, you can call it prescient or whatever. I mean, law enforcement has always sort of walked that edge, but now there's like a light, there really is with the administration and the lean towards a militarized and more controlled environment, cameras everywhere. There's a License to Kill, and courts have backed them up on it almost every time.
Yeah, they have. They really have. So, you know,
Well, I'm glad to hear that song.
After,
that's the first, that's, I remember reading that they made, they recorded that song last week or the week before. I'm like, oh, I want to hear what they recorded. So that's cool.
Oh, so now you got to hear it. Well, is
yep.
there anything special you would like to hear?
I always want to hear a Flower Leopard song that has Shane Rippon on it. If there's anything good, whether it's Heaven's Closed or one of the old ones off the last comp release that you guys did. Yeah. There's something back there.
Shane's a great guy.
Yeah,
he's
I love Shane
out
articles.
There. He's working on some new stuff, too.
Well, we talked about doing the recordings of the Flower Leopard songs, and hopefully he can do some art as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody hasn't heard that song, I just feel sorry for them. I mean, it's just a great song.
It's a good one. It is. I love it. It's really, really touches home. But, you know, I have to tell you that I just got a request for one of your songs on Red Pills 1982.
That is unlikely. Unlikely.
No, I'll... that was a request by yours truly.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That's a good one. I mean, it's funny because when I was on a couple weeks ago or last month, I told the short version that that was a song for Alma. But really, like I wrote that song for Alma, but like 6 months after I wrote it, I realized that like two of the parts of that song were written in different versions, and they're totally different by other prominent punk rock musicians, Mike Palm from Agent Orange and Billy Bones from the Skulls. So it's now kind of an homage to Alma and Mike and Billy. Because, you know, sometimes these brain worms just get in your head, these songs, and you just, you know, how many different notes and chords can you put together? So I'm just glad that song came out fun. It's for Alma and for everybody else who was there.
All right. That's great. Well, you know, Steve Fortuna of the Billy Bones, the Soul, formerly the Skulls, he came to my Café de Grand reunion back in 2012 and it was really fun to see everybody again. I mean, I wasn't able to get a hold of everyone, but it was really fun because I started off with a 1-day event, and it ended up to being a 2-day event because everybody wanted to play. I mean, Mike Watt and the Missing Men, Circle One, Carlos DeCarlo.
I remember that was right when I was moving back up north. You were doing that. I was in Burbank, right?
Yes, I did it in Burbank.
That's right.
So
that was great. That, I heard, was a great event. And the other thing I just wanted to mention, because you were saying about Billy Bones, you know, I just have to say that I happened to turn on the TV one day and saw that documentary.
Isn't it beautiful?
It was really amazing and well done. And, I mean, you look, there's a lot of people in punk rock who have lots of integrity and have done lots of things. And so it's nice to see again more exposure. You know, mainstream exposure from that stuff is not a bad thing at this point, especially since so many people keep dropping off like flies every year. So, cheers. That was awesome. I'll play with them any day.
There you go.
Set up some shows,
Candy.
Let's do it.
I know, right? You know, and oh my gosh, I mean, even John Ranson of the Smut Peddlers came, and oh my gosh.
Big John Ranson fan. Big John Ranson fan. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
We did
Alan
a cover
Adam
of one of their songs, too.
Yeah? Oh, cool.
Excellent.
Which one did you do?
Well, when I was in Thirsty Livers down in L.A. in 2010, we did a cover of Fuck You, That's Why.
Oh,
and John
I
was actually
that.
There. Yeah, there's a video of it. John's actually there with us singing along. I mean, it's pretty fun. I think we played a couple times when we played with them, with his other band, the Boners. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's who he brought with at the reunion was he brought the Boners.
Good. That
and
was a great band.
I still have my Boner t-shirt. It's got the weenies all over it.
Nice.
Actually, it's a white dress shirt. He spray painted all these little woodies on it. It was fun.
Very cool.
But, yeah, I have another song by Red Pills, Anytime, Anyplace. another Red song by Red Pills, and we've got Kenny Kimmel here from Red Pills. And Kenny.
Yeah. Thanks for playing the music. I really, really like hearing it, and it's fun to record. And I'm hoping that soon enough we'll be able to get out playing some shows. March in Grass Valley, and then in April we're in Sacramento. So come on out and see us and check us out.
I will. Sacramento's only a 2-hour drive, but an hour if I've got a lead foot.
There you go. Well,
all
thanks
right,
again,
Kenny,
for having us on the radio, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Kenny. All right.
Cheers. Bye.
And, okay. Good to have him. And we have another song coming up here. Let me see. Oh, here's one from The Curse Is Written. Another guest in the studio here, Fred Triptoe, the writer of the protest song you just heard. Hello, Fred.
Hey, how's it going, Candace?
All right. You have amazing talent on your guitar. I have to tell you, I mean, you are so great, and I just love it. And, you know, I have so many people tell me that, you know, when you're live on stage, you are just amazing, and especially when you go off on your solos. I mean, I have people telling me all the time how great they loved your show.
That means a lot. Sometimes a lot of it seems like it's coming out existentially, you know, like it's out there, maybe like the crowd's feeding something off, you know, for you that you're radiating with your energy. And sometimes, you know, especially if, like, you're religious or whatever, you know, you got to remind yourself that it's also internal as well. You know, that means a lot. I mean, I put in a lot of hours trying to do, like, music theory and stuff. And a lot of that's like an ABA, like, jump in from the song into the free form with everybody kind of free forming in different keys and key changes coming back into the song and stuff. I just, you know, sometimes you got to play to your audience and you got to give them something real. I like to give the consistent variety in my show. So that way, like, it's going to have the same message or the same vision, stay with the same wholesomeness. But I don't really want you to be able to 100% expect what's going to go on live, because then you buy the album, you know what I mean?
Sure. And we've got to get one of your albums out there, because so far, well, we do have you up on downloading, and, you know, we're working hard this year. It's my goal to put out 10 albums in a physical form, you know, CDs, vinyl, however we can swing it, you know, and I have another song here written by Fred Triptoe of The Curse Is Written, and this is one of my favorites. I really like your vocals in this one, and this song is titled Fight the Good Fight.
the gym instead of pain. All I know is that thing is believing the bloodshot eyes gotta get it right. Now I gotta go and let it die. Seeing things in different lights. Fight to feel it to get it right. Seeing things in different lights. Fight to feel it to get it right. I'm going horse Houston Shin on my swing on the whim. Got my pedals on the feet. And I'm feeling the beats, the beans, beans, the beans, the beans, the beans, the beans. Instrumental breakdown, here it comes now.
I'm always playing that one. Mixture of songs I'm getting ready to come out with and songs from the first album too, you know. I've even got ideas for even more songs. I'm one of those types of people like always writing songs like every day, you know what I mean? So and I feel like that's important if that's your style, you know. And there should be like different types of people make up a band, you know what I mean? Like sometimes you got like the overthinker and you got like the person who's like straight rocks out or is like a straight energy, you know what I mean? You put those two people together, all of a sudden you got something that's hitting all the points, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And other ideas that I have is like things to have a realness to it. Sometimes you don't always get your hour-long set, you know what I mean? And sometimes things will happen where, like, the band before you is killing it or whatever. And this will happen more times than not. This is take this as a grain of salt advice. So let's say you were going to have, worst-case scenario, you're planned on a 15-minute set. You were going to do 3 songs or 15 minutes. It comes down to, like, hey, we got to cut you down to 8 minutes. Like, what are you
right.
going to do about that? You got to cut out the shine, you know what I mean? You got to still
sure.
tell your story, build a climax within that 8 minutes. Instead of where that you were at. And I feel like also being able to mix it up, it prepares you to have a longer show and to tell your story with more detail, but you got to cut out that shine sometimes. I don't know. Sometimes too is the worst thing to have is kind of like a dead space within the music or whatever. And I'm kind of think tanking this for you. So basically, make sure that the order is fluent, either with the timing or the key changes, and then the fluency. It's got to continue to tell your story. You don't go one way and then polar opposite your next song, you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to have a growth from this point to that point, have the points in between that.
There you go. And, you know, we have a new... addition to our show today, owner of Mystic Records, Doug Moody, is here with us.
Hello, Candace, and hello, friends. I decided to have a cup of tea and listen to you all and join in, so I'm listening, and I'm with you, and I'm still able, with the wonderful help of Candace, to launch your message. Mystic is nothing really but telegrams to the world from people who want to change it, who want us to live together, who want us to understand the rules of living together. I want to do what I want to do, and I'll let you do what you want to do. We're not breaking people's arms or backs. We're not forcing people to get up and march waving an American flag for 2 hours before they go to work. This ridiculous dictatorship of some countries has got to be broken, and there's only one way in my mind to do it, and that's with music. Music has broken more barriers than religion, war, and crossed more languages, and yet it's only 8 notes. And along with that 8 notes, if you couple the words carefully, you'll get your message across, and Mystic will be your platform forever. I celebrated my 89th birthday in November and my 65th birthday in America in January. And I thank you all for urging me on, especially Candace. She says, good, you got another 10 years. We got to celebrate 100. I'll be there, girl. And
that's right. That's
you
right.
You guys, if you don't meet me, from my heart, I welcome you on Mystic. From my soul, I tell you, no matter, even if it costs us our blood and our breakfast, we'll pay to keep you and your message alive on Mystic. God bless you all. And this is from Doug, okay?
Thank you,
Doug.
Yes. Well, you know, Fred was just talking about his music and the songs that he writes, and he's such a very talented young man, and he's from the band on Mystic, The Curse Is Written.
Right. Thank you.
I appreciate it, and thank you for giving me this opportunity not only to speak today, but to have a platform for my music to be enjoyed by other people. I feel like that's very important. And to go in with what you were saying, music is very important, and it teaches you you can have creativity within your life. No matter what you're doing or whatever your title is or your job, if you wanted to go that far, is like you could be creative in whatever that you're doing. Some things are harder to do that than others, but I feel like when you can have that little bit of creativity or that understanding or that touch, that's what sets us aside. You know what I mean? Sets us apart.
It does. It does. It really does. And like I was looking through your music here, here's one I want to play for Doug. This one's titled Where the Clover Grows. The Curse Is Written by Fred Pico.
I smash my fist into your face. I lick the blood. We'll be right back.
hearts were meant to decide where the clover's grown. Heal the wounds from the inside. Beautiful, beautiful lyrics, Fred.
Thank you.
And I like the end there where you say, you don't intimidate me. That's very bold and out there.
Man, we got to do a show locally up here in Portland. I'm from Vancouver, though. We got to play at this bigger club called the Hawthorne or whatever, and we were opening up for this other punk band, Necromantics or whatever. And I remember we were getting to that point. We played that song like fucking towards the end of the set list or something like that. And my drummer, Mike, he went and did like the Tommy Lee fucking grabbing two more sticks, launching the sticks from the snare on that point, all came in on it. And yeah, seeing those songs in front of a bunch of people was, you know, really fucking awesome.
Well, you know, Fred, you're very committed. You're very committed to your career, and you've had a MTV video out before you came to Mystic. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So MTV was going around, and they were, like, interviewing people and shit like that. So basically, this girl got this role, and she really wanted to do, like, you know, rock music. She wanted to do, like, punk rock music. And, like, she was really into, like, Blink-182, Green Day, and stuff like that. And then, like I don't know, there's great lines of music, and it's all an umbrella. But she was also into, like, Paramore and stuff like that, you know. Just putting it in perspective. I was, like, had my little demands, you know what I mean? Like, oh, if we're going to do punk rock, you better talk about Danzig and shit or whatever the fuck, you know. And so I got this job working for them, and they plowed me on all these instruments or whatever, and they had, like, a background singer. And I'm, like, the only one who stood up for them when they kicked him out of the band on TV. I'm like, dude, why'd you bring him down here if you're just going to embarrass him on fucking television and have him practice and fucking all this and that? And then, you know, then they aired that and made me look like I'm standing up for him and I'm an asshole, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, great. Now you guys are really painting my shit. And then, so I fucking got the drummer from my band to come in because they were trying to have me play drums originally. If you got Fred drums, you got problems. So, I got him to come in and play drums, and he just magically got the gig, you know, because I was in there. And I took kind of what we were doing that didn't air in the background and kind of built a song based off of it, and would practice out with the drummer and stuff, and then the bass player would come in and do background vocals and stuff. The only problem, though, was that the singer who's got this really nice guitar, but she didn't want to play it. Like, she also didn't want to learn any more songs other than the one riff song or whatever. And so when it came time to perform it, I didn't want it to be this simple thing. I didn't want it to be a train wreck either, you know what I mean? So I'm playing my heart out, and, like, turned out to work out just great. I'm like, oh, fucking A, it fucking happened. And they're like, play it three times. So proceed to play the song three times, three different ways, but they're all based around the same chord. I just got different solos and shit in there, you know, whatever. And they spite me. They're all mad at me after that, fucking talking me down, and they turned down the guitar. If you actually watch the show, you don't get to listen to any of me playing, hardly get to hear me talk, and then they splice together the cutscenes of the three times we played it, and you can't hear me play.
Was that on American Idol?
No, that was MTV Made.
Oh, okay.
American Idol wanted to Skype with me, and I was playing to a bunch of executives and shit over the phone on a music stand in my house, and
that's not
they
fair
pretty
because
much
you,
were
you
telling
should
me that, yeah, it's been a rough road, to tell you the truth. To tell you, the word is, there's two words for it, three words. One is manifest destiny, if that's a word. Two would be zeitgeist, trying to catch things at the appropriate time and space. I thought the American Idol boosted my confidence in singing a whole lot. Although they didn't really help me with anything, and they told me that I'm not their slice of cookie, so it's like Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, you're mystic slice of the pie, so, you know, American Idol, they lost out because we have you and we're keeping you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I was also trying to do a...
Yeah.
Absolutely, Candy, you're absolutely right. This is where they can speak their mind,
yes,
tell their heart, and I'm going to intrude on your story.
You're not
to give you a side of Mystic that you don't ever see. Mail comes in, and we get about 400 emails a month, and it's devilishly difficult to sleep at night when you know you got all this to answer, people asking questions. I get up sometimes 3 o'clock in the morning, have a Pabst beer, and that's my favorite beer, by the way. And so I started reading the mails, and there was this one from a policeman's son, and he said, thank God for Mystic and the bands. He said, I was going to commit suicide. I didn't know where to turn. I thought I was alone in this world, and my dad's a cop, and you put out copulation, and he heard that it was all against police. And I said, it's against, you know, here, I'll tell you, it's against police violence. I love the fact that we're protected by the police. But when they're violent and they want to stop a show like they used to in Hollywood and come in and roust you at Cathy DeGrand. Candice used to book the Cathy DeGrand and have police come in and roust everybody out. So.
Yeah, it was that.
We open the door at Mystic. We open the studio door and have a 50 or 100 kids in, lock the door, and the police are outside on the street, and we'd have a live show in Mystic. So I listened to this kid.
Let me tell Fred, the nightclub that he's talking about that I used to book, Mystic Studio was right around the corner. So when kids outside got in trouble, Doug would open the door and let them come in.
Yeah, then then they could watch recording and actually see that we were not commercial. We were straight from the heart and soul. And so very rarely did I have to chastise a band. The band was doing what I grew up. I grew up while the Nazis, even the King of England was a Nazi. Can you believe they made him change his name from Battenberg, German, to Windsor, which was the name of the castle. We had a Nazi king running our country, and thank God Winston Churchill got up and said, everybody, let's go to war and let's clean this up. And we did. We knocked them out of the ocean. We knocked them out of the sky, but our tanks were going at 7 miles an hour to keep up with the infantry, and their tanks went at 30. So the poor guys were bypassed. And I saw them arriving from Dunkirk in their underwear. They couldn't even wear a uniform, walk a mile out to sea to get on boats and come home. So I've grown up where freedom is a big word and meaningful to me. And when I hear you talking about the freedom to think, the freedom to be, you stir me up from when I was a teenager to where I am at 90 now. And
Thank you, Fred.
I'm with you all the way. Now, this kid wrote me a letter saying he was going to commit suicide until he found he wasn't alone. And, you know, I've carried that within me for the past 4 or 5 years, that a policeman's son was being frightened by his father and was ready to commit suicide until he listened to a lyric on Mystic. So you're doing some good out there. You're doing things that you don't know, that people don't communicate to us. You do not realize how important you are to this world that will continue to make people find a place like America where we can be ourselves. God bless you, buddy, and I'm with you all the way.
Thank you. And Winston Churchill did go on to be president, and I think the turn of the tide really happened when the British discovered radar.
Yeah, well, radar, we made a deal through Canada. America was not allowed to sell to a nation and doing war, and American people didn't want to be in the war until Japan attacked them. So we had to buy all the tanks, all the guns and everything through Canada. So we gave them radar. We also gave them television. We also gave them all kinds of things like silk, the imitation silk. You couldn't get silk during the war, so we gave them nylon. We gave everything to America in copyrights and the right for America to have naval bases all over the world, which they've never given up. We gave them Hawaii, and you notice in Hawaii they still fly it. The corner is a British flag. I'm not British. I'm an American, by the way. I'm 100% American. You came in, you saved our ass. If we didn't have the Americans on land and the French and what was left of the Poles, we had 10 different armies, bits and pieces, and we needed American guns, machine guns. There was not a home in England, which is a small island, two-thirds the size of California, and with 60 million people in it, and you dumped 2.5 million American soldiers. Everybody had a tank or a gun or an American tent with four soldiers in their backyards. Everybody, even in their front yard and backyard, the streets had no room. We weren't using cars because we didn't have enough gasoline. It was all needed for the fighter planes. And so we went to war with American goods that came in via Canada because you weren't allowed to sell to a warlike. So Canada didn't declare war and was able to buy all the stuff and ship with convoys to us. It was America that saved us, and we will always be blessed for America. And, I think they made a mistake when they kicked the royal family out. We kept the royal family in England because when you want to throw someone out of office or when you want to tell them to change their name, we don't want German Nazi names running England. So they fired the king. The people just went under Churchill, went straight to the royal family and said, you have the right to fire them. Fire them, get rid of your brother. They put the brother in jail, the uncle, in jail all throughout the war. He was in jail as he was a Nazi king, and we replaced him. And like they've got Queen Elizabeth today. She grew up learning how to be Americanized. Anyway, so you're doing some really great things. Your lyrics are read by people, and all I can say is keep going, and we will be able to keep going too. We are your fuel. You are our fuel. You light our fire. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, Fred plays a lot up there in Portland, Oregon, and you know we've got all these imaginary lands in mystic land, and Portland has become punk land. In fact, Fred was at the Nardcore Comes to Portland show. Well, we did that, 2 years ago, Fred?
Oh, yeah. I actually was trying to establish myself. There was a lot of really, really creative bands out there and stuff, and I think that they were playing from, like, morning until night, just so many. I don't know if I should spurt them off, which ones I got. I remember Gerbil Turd gave me a T-shirt. Fucking,
they did
really good. Who else was there? We had,
I think No Use for a Name was there.
Yeah, there were a couple.
The stuntmen,
that was the one I was thinking of. Their frontman had a lot of energy, and I thought that, he was out on the floor singing or whatever, doing his thing, because the stage couldn't really contain his whole band moving around or whatever. That was really cool. I think Ron played that night, and
from the Rotters.
Trying to. Yeah, and we're trying to put together some shows coming up. I'm here in June 1st. We got a show. We're trying to talk about going into the California area, doing a couple shows around there.
Nice.
I got another drummer who might be filling in on those shows, and that would be really great. A lot of things are set in motion for that. Hopefully, people want to show up, or we get other music bands to tag along. That'd just be great.
Sure, and when you drive down I-5 and you hit Cottonwood, you better give me a call and come out to the ranch for a moment and you know, have a swim in the river or, you know, set up your equipment and do a private video shoot or something. You know, we're right on the way.
Well, you can bribe me with French toast anytime, you know.
There you go.
So, shit. Fuck. No, things are going really good. Just pushing a lot of hours in the studio and stuff. Going by, doing massive amounts of fucking shows. It's turned into like... The thing is, with music nowadays, a lot of bars or clubs or whatever, which I'm very fortunate, and I'll say this while I'm on the air, to actually be able to do mostly club shows, because a lot of bands didn't have it that easy, and a lot of bands that started out on Mystic, even, were doing, like, people's basements, you know what I mean?
Right.
And, like,
that's,
like, one at a time, that's brick by brick, but it's like, this highway... Or the long road, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It's really stay true to yourself and what you want to do. I'm just really blessed that I get to do what I like to do, you know what I mean? And
sure.
So I'll like 2 shows, 3 shows in a night, you know what I mean? Like go hit this place and that place. I have like really specific schedules and shit, and that can be really trippy. And people like try to pay me and stuff, but like. A lot of these places, like I said, are like 3 places went under on New Year's, and then so then the smaller places become bigger, and the places that were smaller are now massive, and then the places where you were able to play, you can't really play there anymore. You know what I mean? And
so... And your sets get cut short when somebody wants to hog all the glory on stage and run over the time slot that they were allowed. So then that cuts everybody else down the line.
Well, that's why when we got the opportunity to work with Mike Thrasher over in Portland. He's a promoter who does a bunch of shows and stuff. Fucking, we had like a 30-minute slot. I think we played for 26, 28 minutes. So you get that 2 minutes of, okay, let's get the half stack off and not break the amp, you know what I mean, or whatever, because pressure's on when there's like, million people, you might have just done a fiery show, but maybe now your heart's pumping 1,000,000 miles an hour. You know what I mean?
Sure.
With all those little nuances and stuff. It's kind of like being on time to anything that you're doing, you know? You're always like 10, 15 minutes early, letting whoever know that you're ready to do what you're going to do. Or maybe
sure.
If you're doing a job like and it's not your job to, say, clean the fry shit, right? So you go and you clean out the fry gutters or whatever. And who cleaned out the fry gutters? Who cares? They're clean.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're very down to earth, Fred, and it's refreshing to hear from you and know that, you know, your heart is always in everything you do. No matter what it takes to get there, you're going to fight the good fight and you're going to continue on and keep spreading your message as far as it goes, you know. And I still have those designs you sent me for a CD. I mean, I just love the lyrics to this song, Fight the Good Fight, Wake Up in the Morning, Got Me Kicks On Tight, you know. Things seem to be in a different light. Fight the feeling to get it right. Feeling, you know, it's just so wonderful. You have the inspiration. You know, you're all about the change, you know, and to get things going and keep things going. And it's just really refreshing and, you know, seeing things in a different light. I love those lyrics. Fight the feeling to get it right, you know. Good song.
change is one of those things, you know, the only constant is change. Recently, and it's actually February, so I guess we can talk about it, is Martin Luther King just had a birthday. So I was going back watching some of his speeches or whatever, and I watched his, I don't want to drag on too long about him or anything, because that's really emotional stuff, especially because that was like a lot of stuff really got to happen. So I was watching like his last speech, which is actually called like Mountain, it was like Top of the Mountain or Mountaintop or something like that. A Bend to the Mountaintop, I think is what it's called. And basically what I got from it, from like his tone of voice and the crowd, and basically what he said, is he's basically saying, in my words, is I'm seeing this change, and even if I don't make it to the blossoming of this change, it's already begun. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
And that was a big thing. And like last time we talked about Jimi Hendrix. That dude was playing guitar at the same time as that was going on.
Right.
And
Doug Moody started. Go ahead, you first.
Oh, I was just going to say, this dude just recently passed away, but his roadie was Lemmy Kilmister from Motorhead. That's why in his documentary he talks about guys like Little Richie and guys like Chuck Berry, 1950s. What are you going to do if someone doesn't pay you? And so that's a big thing too, you know what I mean?
Right, and that's where Doug Moody comes in. And you know, in the 1950s, African-American artists had a really hard time getting noticed, and Doug has a lot to do with bringing those groups together and getting them recorded. He bought an old pressing plant that had a hole in the roof, and he was pressing their records in the rain and really dedicated to getting these artists out. In fact, he discovered groups like the Five Satins and I don't know, so many others, and even the machine that he used to record them has gone into a museum. I mean, you know, history for civil rights has really come a long way. Isn't that right, Doug?
Yes, and I lived amongst black people in America when I first came in 1953. I had seen the result of two camps in England, one for white soldiers and one for black soldiers. We called them the chocolate men in England. And they, outside the camp, they were just mixing like warlike friends and an army. But at nighttime, well, the place to go to for music at nighttime was the black camp. Their music was so outstanding, everybody wanted to dance or crowd in. So we started going to black music in England after the war. And when I got to New York, I wasn't Jewish, so they ran the business. They didn't want me. And the Italians ran the streets and the jukeboxes, and they didn't want me. So I went to Philadelphia, and I moved in with some black families. And my first million seller was with a young lady called Mahalia Jackson. She was a gospel singer, and I wrote the song with her group called No Matter How You Pray. It doesn't matter if you stand or kneel. He always knows how you feel no matter how you pray. And we sold 1,000,078, which were 10-inch records made on thick vinyl, really breakable, and after a few playings, they scratched a little, but we sold 1,000,000 of Mahalia Jackson. Then I started messing around with music even more, and Dick Clark called me and said, I want to be your partner. You got 200 people lining up outside Holiday Inn, want to dance. What do you got? And I said, well, we're calling it rhythm and blues, because it's basically blues music, but the people playing it couldn't read music. So I used to dance on the kitchen floor and they'd pick up the tempo, and then I'd whistle and hum the melody line and they'd pick up that. And then between their words, my words, and we all put words together, we had songs that took off. Well, That was the beginning of 53 gold and platinum records and being told how to behave in the record business, what kind of music to deal with, what kind of groups to have. And I rebelled when I was 53 years old. I went in the studio and started Mystic Records, and I want to hear punk music. And, well, that's what you got. I rebelled, and I made a punk label where people could tell their feelings and could fight for the right to be what you want to be in America. So that's all I want to. That's about it. Okay.
Okay.
Well, rock and roll has always been a form of rebellion, no matter kind of however that we go about it.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, this is the end of the show. This is one of Doug's favorite. One of Doug's favorite songs from one of his old-time friends who wrote this, and this is a version by Bow Wow Wow. Today, I want to thank you for coming on the show. And
hey, thanks for having me.
Again. You're welcome, Fred. And it's time to party or go home.
Peace
and
out.
We'll see you all next time.
Thank you. Next time.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Thank you for sharing your day with me. Bye.
Thank you, Doug Moody. Love you. Bye.